This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We begin the Thursday morning edition. It is VSiN by the Books. I'm Dave Ross here in downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. He is our closer, Jensen Lewis, on assignment today in beautiful Chapel Hill, North Carolina. You have arrived safely, my friend. Whenever you travel across our great country, like your pictures yesterday, it just takes me back. Takes me back to the D.C. days when you're flying in there to Reagan, Ronnie Airport, as I like to call it. Jensen, how was your travels, and how's day one so far there in Raleigh?
It is great to be here. We're in Chapel Hill, just on the outskirts of the University of North Carolina, getting ready for Super Regionals that will start tomorrow afternoon on ESPN2. The Arizona Wildcats, the alma mater of the Hefe, Steve Cohen going up against the Tar Heels of Michael Lombardi and company. So should be a titanic tilt. We're supposed to get rain most of the day today, so might have to move the workouts inside. But then, as you remember this time of year, Dave, mid-90s.
Oh, yeah.
1,000,000% humidity. So if you're a pitcher, you're getting loose in like 8 throws, and you could probably throw for an entire day. So I am happy to report there are no train tracks anywhere near this hotel. If I feel a little bit more sprite and a little bit moving around, that's because I slept through the night. It's a novel concept.
Beautiful. It is a wonderful part of the country down there. Glad you're down there safe. And we do have a great show lined up here on this Thursday. Cody Decker is going to join us here in hour number one. Talks of Major League Baseball, co-host of the Beadle and Decker Show. Of course, Mike Palm, what's pressing for Mike today in hour number two? He's going to join us in studio. Aaron Halterman is going to join us to begin hour number three. Aaron and Mike Somich do a great job in the network here breaking down the races. We got one more big one to go for the Belmont Stakes this weekend. And great to catch up always with Reed Kuhn in Washington, D.C., speaking of, since you just flew over our great nation's capital. Reed's going to join us there from D.C. to break down UFC 316. That is Saturday night in New Jersey, starting to heat up there with some of the rhetoric back and forth. We'll get to a lot of that as the show goes. But, Jensen, wow, what an evening we had last night, and that begins today's highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
We kind of saw a little bit of everything in game one of the Stanley Cup Finals last night north of the border in Edmonton. The fastest goal ever to begin a Stanley Cup game, and Leon Draisaitl, boom, gets that game started with a bang. And then it's 3 goals for Florida, and you're like, wow, Florida's taking over this thing 3-1. You get it to 3-2, you tie it up at 3, and then it's Draisaitl, the bookends, gets it started and wraps it up with the overtime game winner, and it's Edmonton erasing that 2-goal deficit, and they take game one against Florida last night, 4-3. Boy, if we were looking for a rematch here, and heavy hitters, the over, by the way, does cash. I had that at 6. It was 6.5 is what it closed there. It gets home, obviously, with the 7. And on the money line here, you had to sweat it out either way. $1.22 for the Oilers gets the money there. Jensen, what's your biggest takeaway from game one? Is it if you're Florida, man, we blew a 2-goal lead? Or is it, okay, no, this was as close as it gets, as even as it gets, and they just got us an OT?
Yeah, first and foremost, it is the resiliency, right, of Edmonton. And, I thought the commentators did a great job last night kind of talking about both teams' journeys, right? And it's something we've really chronicled as well all the way back when the initial FOMO of, like, if you don't jump on Edmonton down 2-0 to the LA Kings, you know, with McDavid and Draisaitl, the sage advice of Jonathan Davis, you would have felt exactly what you're probably feeling right now with Draisaitl bookending not only the scoring, but also getting the Oilers up 1-0. I also do agree with you that you look how Florida built that lead, and then Edmonton kind of chipped away, right? Bobrovsky had a couple of heroic saves, and this one could have ended in regulation had a couple of them gone his way. But I tell you, it is remarkable to see, just make the analogy, waves crashing on the ocean. It's just a matter of time. It just feels like Edmonton's offense is inevitable, and they really made it stand up winning game one in OT.
I'm a little surprised when I look for the Conn Smythe this morning here and see how those numbers have changed after game one, and that Connor McDavid is now odds on, minus $1.50. The Oilers, again, if you want to do these type of things and try to save a little bit of money, you don't want to play the Oilers now. They're minus 210 to win the Stanley Cup. Draisaitl is plus 450. And you know, I kind of look at it, it's different, right? The voting is going to be different from the Stanley Cup Finals than it is in the NBA. But if you go back to the Eastern Conference Finals in the NBA, I think most people thought it was going to be Tyrese Halliburton that wins that award. He didn't. It was Pascal Siakam. So while a public narrative might be out there and a betting narrative could be out there that it's got to be Connor McDavid, I don't know that that's necessarily going to be the case with the voters. And this is why we talk about it all the time and why I largely avoid these markets, because you're trying to get in the heads of other people that might not be seeing it the same way. Draisaitl with those bookends yesterday, and I thought for the most part Florida did a pretty good job of bottling up Connor McDavid as best as you can, the best player in the world. I think Draisaitl at plus 450 might be live. Like, do you see it that way, or do you think, oh man, it's now moved odds on, it's got to be McDavid?
Episode 2 of FOMO is when you and I talked about during the conference finals, if you think Edmonton does move on, that we could potentially have a case of Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen showing its ugly head here, where particularly, you know, the guy that has done the most all around does not end up getting the award. So, I mean, what do we have Draisaitl at? Upwards of 13-1, yep. 14-1 at points there. So, yeah, it has come way, way down from that. I think ultimately we learn a little bit more. If you want to, I don't know if Edmonton can get both. You know, the resiliency also on the flip side here of Florida, Dave, we've seen it many times that group battle tested, you know, well proven. They know their backs are against the wall just a little bit, but I just don't sense like, all right, you know, hey, we took the opening salvo. But that group showed offensively, they can get out there. You saw, you know, Stuart Skinner just a little bit shaky there in the first bit. So I would expect that if you want game two, I would hold off on Draisaitl. And I would even look maybe, I don't know if Barkov's the way to go, but I know Marshawn, you know, had his hand in a little bit of everything last night.
Yeah, he did.
That might be one of the long shot, you know, big lottery ticket ones, but I'm probably staying away from it just for a moment. I do think Florida gets the equalizer here in game two, though.
I think, sure, if you're a Panthers backer and you're like the bobber at 4-1 for Sergei, maybe you look that way. Plus $1.90 is what they are in the comeback here. But I'm with you. You maybe Barkov 12-1, even a couple of the tallies there for Bennett last night at 20-1. It does feel like it's going to be a long series. I think we'd both be surprised if this is wrapped up in five or anything less than six. So I do think these numbers are going to change here as the finals go. But what a start for Edmonton. Certainly Draisaitl with those bookend goals to get it done in OT. Speaking of getting it done, break up the rocks. Are you kidding me? Get out the brooms. Jensen, did you see these guys? They're dancing. They're dancing around after getting this 3-2 win, and they sweep the Marlins down there in South Beach. And I'm watching it going, I'm happy for these guys. These are adults playing a kid's game that we all love. And why not have some fun after getting your first sweep of the year? So not only do you lock up your first series win, but you win three in a row. Dare I say it's the hottest team in baseball. Let's not get carried away. But three in a row for the Rockies here, Jensen. What do we make of this resurgence by Colorado?
I texted our friend Ryan Spielborgs yesterday, and I was like, what is the mood on this getaway day flight going to be? Like, do you guys even know like where to put your hands or, you know, how to act? Like, this is foreign territory. So first and foremost, again, you know, this is the big leagues. It's hard to win a baseball game. It's hard to win three in a row. It's hard to sweep a series, especially, you know, getting a sweep on the road, regardless of who the opponent is. So credit where it's due there. I think overall, the funniest part is that, you know, you and I and Gil and a lot of other people here at the network, we love getting in to these monthly most wins totals and those competitions and markets. I just think the best is, and I think we might have it, with Jeffrey Benson saying that, hey, you know, they were upwards of, 5,000-1 at Circa to have the most wins in June. And here we are. They have the most wins in June, and not one person threw some pizza money on them to have it and be able to get it done.
Just, and it's up there now. If you're watching with us here on VSiN.com, okay, what were the odds? This was Mark Bono had asked Jeffrey Benson here and Patrick, who does a great job in the around town as well. What were the odds for the Rocks to have the most wins in the month of June? And to your point, Jeffrey just responded, 5,001, they got no bets, as in zero, ningun, none, nary a one. And here's what's amazing about that. kudos to Jeffrey Benson and the guys here at Circa, the guys and gals here at Circa, because they put up a fair number. We're talking about 500 to 1 to win the World Series.
Yeah.
300 to 1. They give you 5,000 to 1 to have the best record in a month. And nobody took a bite of that apple. Well, you got three. They're idle today, by the way. They're going to play Friday. They'll start a new series on Friday. But, like, against, by the way, my Metropolitans, in Colorado. Oh, boy, we don't want any piece of them right now, Jensen. But the point is, that's what we're talking about with, like, how do you bet the – like, that's at least a fair number. No, I would not have bet it at 5,000 to 1. But at least they're not hanging a 200 to 1, right? They're giving you a legit reason to make an honest wager.
And, hey, if you had the courage, the stones, what may have you to go out on that limb, it's the longest of diving boards we have in a major league market, then, you know, more power to you. I guess the funny part, Dave, is if they do get hot and we're halfway through the month and this is an actual sweat. Like, could you imagine? Could you imagine just the lone person that would have had this ticket and everyone's looking at him like, are they going to do it? Are they going to do it? So it's not going to happen. But, man, what a fun story to start off June for them.
If they sweep my Mets over the weekend, then we're on to something. Like, you really would be like, I cannot believe one person, not one person made that bet at 5,001. Normally always somebody takes a shot at a supreme long shot like that. All right, so much more to get to. Game one of the NBA Finals. That begins tonight. We'll discuss next here. It's VSiN by the Books.
Right here on VSiN.
Well, we continue VSiN by the Books on this Thursday edition. We're going to get to Cody Decker in the very next segment. Talk more Major League Baseball. We appreciate everybody that chimed in on social media yesterday. I believe Tommy hit us up too, and we explained how much he loves how much the baseball content we try to do on a day in, day out basis. Something you and I talked about early. Well before the season began here to begin the Daily Diamond. We'll get to that, get to Cody's thoughts as well. But we do appreciate everybody watching and listening, Sirius Channel 158 as well. They have begun the Canadian Open north of the border, the RBC Heritage. Remember, this is a new venue this week. It's going to be in Toronto, so it's going to be our first look at it. It does feel like a big boy golf course out there. Rory McIlroy will be teeing off here, Jensen, in about 25 minutes. I'm not good necessarily with my translation times of what time it is actually in Canada right now, but he's going to be out there in a power grouping of Ludvig Åberg, the big Swede, and Rory. And then you got the youngster, Lou Clanton's going to be joining him as he's making his PGA Tour debut as a PGA Tour member with that PGA Tour card. So yes, he's played on tour before, but now he's a full-fledged member. That'll be interesting power group there to get to. Also, we've got NBA game number one tonight. It's the Pacers. It's the Thunder. It has now settled in at about 9.5 and the total at 230.5 as we get to game one tonight in OKC. Now, the weight did not seem to hurt the guys up north last night in Edmonton. And I know it's apples to oranges here sometimes in different sports. If we're worried about a layoff there, everybody looked like they had their legs. We got a classic game one. Will we get a classic game one tonight, Jensen, like we got last night in the Stanley Cup Finals? Or do you expect more of a feeling out process before we see a lot of the action? Last night, those guys got to it. It was 2-1 before you could blink an eye there in that first period. I wonder what the first quarter is going to look like tonight.
Well, the atmosphere and knowing that you have the Thunder all the anticipation of them headed into the postseason as the one seed, arguably the best all-around team in the NBA regular season. This was the goal, right, from the beginning, was to get here, was to potentially have home court advantage if it worked out the way that it did. It has done that. And, yes, there is still a Cinderella part of what Indiana has done. They are a four seed. They did have to come through a gauntlet to be able to get to this point. That being said, I do think you still have that difference. And Dave, you know this. Walking out in UFC, right? All right, you have weight classes and you have certain people that when they're staring their opponent down, you know it's a difference, man. You just know, like, as soon as that person steps in, they're like, oh, God, they're a lot bigger than I thought they were. Or like, yeah. This is a way more intimidating person than I even thought at weigh-ins. Or, you know, when the moment starts to hit you as a competitor, that's a difference maker. And I think that's where the Thunder potentially have this bigger opportunity to make that more of a double-digit win tonight. So I'm not surprised that the spread is where it is. I think I told you I leaned a little bit more towards Thunder -9 yesterday. If you could get it still on DraftKings, I think it's upwards of now 9.5. But I do think we get a series. I do think we do that. And so it's something you and I have talked about too. If we don't believe that it's 5 games, then, you know, you can go play that exact price if you feel that it's still the Thunder series to take here. And if you do think that the pumpkin, you know, doesn't happen after midnight, then why not take a shot at Indiana 4-2 or 4-3 at 14-1, 15-1? So I'm with you. I selfishly would love to see it go 6 or more, but I do think, just as it pertains to tonight, I think we get the Thunder kind of throwing their weight around a little bit and showing you why they're one of the best teams in the NBA.
You know, I do kind of look at it, because you're right. Everybody that whether it's in our spaces, whether it's national media, however you want to kind of decipher it, it does feel like that this is a foregone conclusion. This is OKC. They're just the better team. It's time to put Indiana away. Nice story, but the run ends here. Here's where I'd push back a little bit on that narrative. Is that I feel like people have already forgotten. I felt like they forgot. It's why I was on the Pacers. Excuse me, I get choked up talking about this, Jensen. Why I was on the Pacers last time out against the Knicks. It's almost like they forgot right. That they had beaten the Knicks the year before in a Game 7 in Madison Square Garden. And I feel like, to a degree, people have forgotten that Indiana, in the Eastern Conference Finals a year ago, led every single game against the eventual champions, the Boston Celtics, from a year ago, before bowing out in those fourth quarters in 4 of those 5 games, right? So I look at it and I kind of go, if you're in the betting market, if you're ordaining OKC as this uncrowned champion that, like, you know, and maybe, you know, maybe they do this, Jensen, and I'm going to be on the wrong side of this looking down and go, man, they really were just the flat-out better team. I kind of look at it and I go, Indiana's the team that has –
yes,
more experience,
sure,
in this situation than OKC does. So I don't think the bright lights of Oklahoma City are going to be too big for them when they've gone to the Garden the last 2 years. They've gone to Boston and put up these epic fights. I don't see it the same way that the majority of the betting market sees it. So I'm with you. I'm going to be on that longer series type thing here. I think we're going at least 6. These could be famous last words here, but I look at it and I go, I have a feeling Indiana is going to give much more of a pushback than I think people think.
Totally with you. And, you know, just even from a player prop standpoint, I know we were talking about it yesterday, just looking at my notes here. I think I still would put out there, and I know it's come back a little bit on FanDuel, looking at the Pascal Siakam assist prop, over 2.5 is still -$1.80. There at FanDuel. Again, shop around in some places, because Caesars has it -$1.60. So, you know, still some quote-unquote affordable prices if you're looking at some of these props. Throw another one out there. Alex Caruso actually kind of popped up for me. Rebounds for him, over 2.5. You can get -$1.75 at MGM, at FanDuel. You can get it $1.72, 3 more rebounds. And then, you know, we come to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think we also believe, and I believe that Wes kind of talked about it yesterday, JBT as well, that when you think about where Indiana is going to be, kind of that run-and-gun mentality, I think they also will be predicated on, like, we're going to do our best to try and make sure someone else than the SGA beats us.
Right.
So does that necessitate SGA being a little bit of a facilitator? I'm not mad at you if you want to jump on, you know, potentially SGA over 6.5 assists too. You can get that at FanDuel -$1.52. You can get it at Caesars at -$1.20. So again, shop around a little bit there. Those would be 3 props that kind of stand out to me right off the bat.
Yeah, and I would say this too: if you're going to be on the Indiana side, whether it's Game 1, whether it's long term of the series, I think the NNN boys, the Nesmith and Nemhards, they're going to have to play really big in this series. You got to get the scoring out of Nesmith. You got to get the defense out of Nembhard if you really feel like they can hang around in this series. And that goes back to, can you slow down SGA? The one thing that I do think that OKC has not seen yet, and to a degree, Minnesota had a great six-man in Naz Reid off the bench, right? But Denver primarily, when they played them, and that was, we saw life and death, right? Could have easily lost that series. They were going up against basically a starting five and, you know, a really small bench that they did not have a deep bench there for from Denver, and you had an injured starter and Michael Porter Jr. You're going to play depth now. You're going to play actual depth from Indiana. And Rick Carlisle is not scared to go to that second unit and say, you know what, these guys are going to run with you. And then Halliburton might sit for 10 minutes of a quarter. That won't be unusual for them, right? So I think in this war of attrition is what we could get. You know, last night I didn't get there on a side, but I got to the total on the over. This might lean me to an under if I don't like a side. That there, that really will be like, we're going to check you game one. We're going to mix and match lineups. We're going to figure it out kind of in game one. But I could see that kind of stalling out early until they get their sea legs, if you will. And then we'll see what those numbers look like potentially for game two. But could you see that playing out, that a little bit of a slower start as we really do try to mix and match what lineup, whether it's a second unit, that we can use to slow down the SGAs of the world?
100%, buddy. I love the handicap. And again, we've seen some fluctuation, right, with that total hitting around 231, 231 and a half, down to 230 and a half up there at Circus. So yeah, absolutely. Could also see, again, if you do believe there's a feeling out period, that first quarter under for the total might also be a way to attack it as well. I'm nervy. Hey, NBA Finals, a lot of guys playing in it for the first time. So yeah, absolutely could see that. Guys trying to get some depth perception there. A little bit different when you're shooting with the heart in your throat and everything beating real fast. So I love where that idea is, and anxious to see this get underway tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be like in the movie Airplane. First time? Yeah. Nervous? No. Yes. Well, I've been nervous lots of time. I mean, it's their first time. You're going to be nervous a little bit. It's going to happen. So you just try to quell those nerves as best you can. What a great scene in Airplane. By the way, if you want to bet smarter, you can start now with Smarter Insights and check out VSiN.com each and every day. All you have to do is go to VSiN.com/subscribe. We're going to have more on the Pacers and the Thunder. That's going to come from JVT, and we're going to have Zach Cohen, and Matt Grissom's got a super regional College World Series guide is already up. Aaron Moore, the professor, with his super regionals as well. Jensen, I'm sure you're going to love to pick their brains as well. Greg Peterson's got his Major League Baseball best bets. How about Zachary Cohen with a French Open semis? I mean, just power pack there. As little as $9.99 to access all those articles at VSiN.com/subscribe.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here. Hour number two, we're going to have Mike Palm join us here in studio. Aaron Halterman is going to join us in hour number three, breaking down the Belmont. And Reed Kuhn is going to help us break down UFC 316 this weekend in Newark, New Jersey. But right now, we go to the dulcet tones of the one and only Cody Decker. You can check him out on the Beetle and Decker show. You can give him a follow on X at Decker6. And joins us now here in the Progressive Guest Line. Cody, how are you on this Thursday morning?
Oh, you know, outside of being pissed off or being fired, I'm great. How you guys doing?
our business is just a crazy, crazy day in, day out. You don't know what the hell is going to happen. We feel for you, my man, but we know you're going to find different outlets out there. They're going to come your way. That is for sure. I do want to start by asking you this. Mm-hmm. Did you see this coming from the Colorado Rockies? Could you possibly have seen this coming?
No, I did not see it coming. But look on the bright side here. They're playing the Marlins. They're not like out here beating some juggernaut teams. Congratulations. You snag another game from the Marlins with three in a row, man. Hey, it's called a winning streak. It has happened before if anyone has ever seen anybody that's played for Lou Brown in Major League Two. Listen, it's a lightning bolt. It'll hit somebody at some point, but it's the worst team that's ever been assembled. Hey, maybe they'll get on a little run here and get to 15 wins, but what are we doing?
Yeah, I agree, Cody. It is kind of funny to see. I was texting Ryan Spielberg yesterday, and I said, hey,
What's that getaway day flight like? I mean, do you guys know what to do? Do you know, like, I mean, is everyone looking around like, oh, hey, this is kind of new. So,
Are we allowed to have beer on the flight?
Tampa Bay,
like, what do we do?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we stay in Florida. Tampa Bay, all of a sudden, kind of quietly ascending up the American League East, doing what Tampa does. Anything that's kind of stood out for you about the Rays in these last couple of weeks?
Yeah, you know, it seems like the vibes are kind of turned around. I've been actually looking at the field. I think you can attest to this, too. Like, they're playing in a minor league stadium. I'm sorry. Every time I watch those games on television, I wonder how every single one of those guys show up to the field going like, yeah, we're playing Major League Baseball today. I am assuming it's taken them a month and a half to get used to these surroundings. And there they are. They're the Rays doing Rays things. And if I'm the Yankees, I would be worried about the Rays doing Rays things. Because as you know, the Rays are a factory. Where the Yankees get hurt, yeah, do they have prospects? Sure. The Rays are just a prospect organization. It's one after another after another after another. The Rays model is a phrase in Major League Baseball that exists for a very specific reason. Because they know how to develop from within. That's why the Dodgers implemented the Rays model. That's why the Giants implemented the Rays model. The only difference is those are organizations that spend money on top of implementing such a prominent minor league model.
Cody, let's stay right there in the AL East for a second. Because if you look down behind the Rays, you'll see the Red Sox at 30-34. Now, last night, they were down one, which has been their bugaboo, in the eighth inning. They tied up, and then they get a walk-off two-run shot, one of the smallest home runs you'll ever see to win a game, 11-9. Point being, out of those 34 losses, 17 of those are by one run, and they were staring down the barrel of another one of those one-run losses, and they flipped the script. Can this be a jumping-off point? You and Jensen know what it's like to be in those clubhouses, and all of a sudden you kind of flip what's ailed you. Could this be somewhat, and I know obviously the Bregman injury is massive, but do they have enough young talent to make up for that and kind of turn the page here?
Well, one, we'll kind of see about the young talent, because if they start bringing up these other young prospects that they're talking about bringing up, and I want to see them very badly, who knows? This could be something. This could turn into something that's like the Orioles two seasons ago. It remains to be seen. And also something that I thought that was really positive, not only in yesterday's win, was Lucas Giolito after the game. Now, Lucas did not have his best game, but got the win. And Lucas immediately after the game started basically holding himself accountable, saying, listen, I'm glad we got the win, but I need to figure it out. And I appreciate that. That's veteran leadership that this team desperately needs. And I'm glad you have it in him. And I'm glad you have it in a Liam Hendricks. And I'm glad you have it in an Alex Bregman, even though Alex is not currently on the field. I think this is, I don't know if this is going to turn around, but you have Alex Cora at the helm as your manager. Anything can turn around. That man is always going to be in the running for manager of the year.
I totally agree. And speaking of bringing guys up, and we've been pounding the drum here, Cody, for Jack Caglione. Like, what else did he have to do in the minor leagues to be able to come back up? I think you and I have been around enough teams where you get the hype of a top prospect. He gets to your club, and then it's like everyone wants to kind of see, all right, you know, is the hype for real? And, I mean, at least for a night, I know they got washed out yesterday, but you saw a completely different energy from the Kansas City Royals. Your thoughts on what Cags brings to the Royals, just not only in the short term, but what that boost can kind of do for the club?
Now, I want to say we'll see, but I'm not going to say we'll see, because I know he went 0-for-4 in that first game, and I did watch every one of those at-bats live. He smoked three of those balls.
Yes.
I mean, just like his exit velos were all 97 plus. One was like at 102. I'm like, okay, this kid's got it. And especially his first three swings, he didn't even waste any time. I mean, he should have had a double. Great play. Another two great plays by Nolan Arenado on him. I think this kid is the truth. I think the Royals are going to have themselves a pretty damn good season. And I'm going to be eating my words about them not getting Santander. Now I know why they didn't get Santander, because this kid was ready to come up immediately.
Yeah, he did. He could have easily just have been 3-for-4 instead of 0-for-4. Got robbed arguably three times in that outing. He does look the part early on. A team that's not looking the part, the Atlanta Braves. I don't want to put a fork in them. We talk a lot about them, Cody. And yet, we thought maybe, okay, this series with Arizona, contender, pretender, and so far Arizona gets the first two, and they lose again last night 2-1. And I just go, when is it to the point we say the Braves are unbettable? Like, when do we get to that point that go, they just can't win these games that they should be winning?
It's getting close. I'll tell you that. It's definitely getting close. I always look at the trade deadline because the trade deadline, still things can happen. The only problem is that they are in the NL East, and you got the Mets and the Phillies at the top of that. Now, good news is that the Phillies have dropped 6 of their last 10, but the Mets have won 8 of their last 10 and getting that big win against Los Angeles Dodgers last night. Pete Alonso with his 5 RBIs. The Braves just need to get it going. I mean, I thought Acuna Jr. would be a lightning rod to go back in there, and he swung at a great right out the gate. But at the end of the day, this team is missing a Max Fried. This team is missing an arm. This team is – I don't know what to say about this team other than they should be at the top of the league. They locked up all of these players years ago because they thought this is a contender for the next decade. And I still think they are, but – man, if they don't get it together by the trade deadline, maybe they start looking to move some pieces. Because can you imagine a world if the Braves decide to move pieces?
Wow.
Major League Baseball trade deadline would be insane.
Yeah, and Cody, just and for people that don't remember, it was a few years ago that Alex Anthopoulos basically went out and got an entire outfield, you know, headline with Jock Peterson, and went on to win the World Series. That was when Ronald Acuna Jr. had been lost for the year. So if the reverse happens, wow, what an impact it would be to the playoffs. Hey, we've talked a lot of National League West here in the program. You're so right about the Giants. They have a big comeback win against the Padres yesterday. As we look at kind of three teams, and I'll give you Padres, Giants, and Diamondbacks. I know we're kind of waiting to see the length of time Corbin Burnes is going to be lost from that rotation. If you had to hitch your wagon to a team right now just to get in the playoffs and maybe win a playoff series, which of these teams do you like right now?
I'll still stay with the San Diego Padres. I do think the Diamondbacks are a playoff team, but man, they still are just hovering around that 500, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but they hovered around that 500 last year at the trade deadline, and then they went on their run and they missed the playoffs by one game as opposed to the year before where they started the run a little bit earlier. This is a team that can go on a run, but that Corbin Burnes injury is something that really concerns me. That's a time where they can probably lose some ground, and you cannot afford to lose ground to the Dodgers, Padres, and Giants, who simply won't stop winning. Now, the Giants have kind of cooled off a little bit, losing 6 of their last 10, but the Dodgers, even though they've lost 5 of their last 10, they're the Dodgers. You know what they're going to do the rest of the season. And the Padres, I'm not betting against the Padres, man. That's the team in the National League I still think is the one that can knock out the Dodgers.
Okay, you mentioned the trade deadline. You mentioned the chaos if the Braves decided to be a seller. Now, Cody, let's just make you a GM. So, right, you're going to be a GM right now. Okay. You know the Pirates are not going to give Paul Skeens the next mega deal. If I offered you a Roman Anthony and a Christian Campbell and, you know, some top names that the Red Sox have in there, could you make a case that the Pirates should at least pick up the phone and talk to other GMs if you're inquiring about one Paul Skeens?
So here's the thing. I have this wonderful pitcher named Paul Skeens, and you have this guy named Roman Anthony. And yes, I notice you have that entire team, the Portland Sea Dogs. I see that you have Mr. Devers over there. I'm trying to try. How about you send me 3 of your full minor league teams, 9 clubbies, and also a percentage of the ownership of the Boston Red Sox, and then maybe I'll give you Paul Skeens.
Hey, as long as you're talking, you're having a conversation, Cody. That's all I ask.
We're talking. There we're is. Just talking. That's it. That's all talking. I'm saying. We're talking.
We're just talking there, here.
I don't think there's a world Paul Skeens move, but if there was something so ridiculous, we're watching the NBA, right? Tibbs was fired. I mean Luka was traded. I was fired yesterday. Anything is possible, dude.
You're still in great spirits. That's why we love you, Cody. We appreciate you hopping on with us here this Thursday morning. We'll catch up again soon.
I need work, dude. I'm broke.
I tried to make you a GM right there. I was trying to elevate
and
you.
And it's not working. I couldn't trade Paul Skeens.
We're back talking golf next year. It's VSiN by the Books.
By the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Always enjoy our conversations with Cody Decker in the last segment. Like the fact that Cody, you just turn the page, baby, and just get back up on that wagon wheel and you go. And that's what he did. We were kind enough to join us here on this Thursday. We're going to get to a lot here in hour number 2 coming up. And obviously, Mike Palm's going to join us in studio 2. But we do have the RBC Heritage going on right now. It has begun, Jensen, as we like to say. We got some rabbits out there early Rory and the big group, the big power group. It's not a, let's be honest, next week is Oakmont. It's the U.S. Open. This is a big tournament, being the Canadian national championship, if you will. Does not have the same gravitas as we know as the United States Open or the British Open, because those are major championships. So the field is not exactly going to be as good as it might be. But right now, Lee Hodges is out to 200 par through one. So I think we're looking at an eagle there to get his round started. A bunch of guys there out at one under par. So we'll see how this course is playing, first time they're playing it in Toronto. The big story here, of course, is going to be Rory McIlroy. And I'll get to that in 1 second, but I do want to remind you, if you've not checked out sharpplays.com, you need to do so. Unmatched transparency, records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real-time global betting info. So alerts directly from the pros. They're going to come to you with that cutting edge technology. They've been around since 2011. They got the receipts, public logs, and results right there in the website for you to peruse. So sharpplays.com, trusted by pros, watched by the books. Check them out now at sharpplays.com. Watched is certainly Rory McIlroy. I don't know that there's a more watched golfer out there than Rory. I know Scotty Scheffler, you can make the argument, and I heard this conversation yesterday, Jensen, of who's the player of the year right now. That'd be a great debate to have. That's how great Rory was at the beginning. That's how great Scotty Scheffler has been right now. Rory, of course, is playing this week at the RBC. It's going to tee off here in a couple minutes. But the bigger question was, he had his media avail yesterday, and we hadn't seen Rory, because if we all remember, at the PGA Championship, at the driver, that was non-conforming, and Rory just deuces. 4 days in a row, I'm out. I'm not speaking to the media. Now, Jensen, he went through a litany of reasons why he didn't speak to the media. Started off with his daughter. I wanted to get back and see Poppy. And then on Saturday, his tee time got moved up. How a tee time getting moved up means you have less time to speak to the media really doesn't make a lot of sense. And then it was, you know, and then on Sunday, just wanted to get out of there. I didn't play well, and I just wanted to get out of there. And then kind of he got to the truth of the matter, that he was pissed off, in his words, about the driver story leaking. That, as you and I talked about on this program, we knew what the reason was. Well, we don't know why he's not talking. Come on.
Yes.
Of course we knew why he wasn't talking. We'll get to that later on in the program. But for now, and this is responsibilities of a, not just a guy on the PGA Tour, but the guy on the PGA Tour. Here's Rory talking about his responsibility to the media.
From a responsibility standpoint, look, I understand, but, you know, if we all wanted to, we could all bypass you guys, and we could just go on this, and we could go on social media, and we could talk about our round and do it our own way. We understand that that's not ideal for you guys, and, you know, there's a bigger dynamic at play here. And I talk to you guys, and I talk to the media a lot. I think there should be an understanding that this is a two-way street, and as much as, you know, we need to speak to you guys, you know, we're sort of, yeah, like this is, we understand the benefit that comes from you being here and giving us the platform and everything else. So I understand that, but again, I've been beating this drum for a long time. Like if they want to make it mandatory, that's fine. But it, you know, in our rules, it says that it's not. And until the day that that's maybe written into the regulations, you're gonna have guys skip from time to time, and that's well within our rights.
This seemed like a veiled threat in there, Jensen. You know what we could do? Hey, we can just go to this, Jensen. I can just go to this thing and tell you about my round. I don't have to go to you guys. I do that because I'm Rory, and I'm benevolent, and I'm here for you. But I don't have to. I don't have to do it because it's not written in the contract. So by the letter of the law, Jensen, he's right. Doesn't have to do it, right? They do not have to do that. I understand that. But to the bigger point of like, hey, man, I'm doing you guys a favor. Are you?
Yeah, right.
Because later on, we're going to get to the soundbite about the non-conforming driver, which was the bigger issue. We'll get to that later on in the program. Because if we want to do the letter of the law thing, that's not going to come out on his side. Right? So what do you make of the veiled threat of, we don't have to talk to you. I do it out of the goodness of my heart.
Yeah, first of all, this guy wouldn't survive a couple of weeks in a big league clubhouse, I can tell you that. Second of all, and again, I can only speak from, you know, our uniform player agreement to collectively bargain between the players union in the league is that we have to make ourselves available. And again, there's no, again, part of being a professional, right, Dave, is you show up when everything goes well and you show up when everything doesn't go well. And that's just part of it. That's the business. And there really only are a handful of media that are out there to kind of get you know, to get the quote or anything like that. The majority of people that cover the sports are there to do a job. They're trying to put food on their table. I mean, it doesn't behoove them to make someone look bad, because then you lose the connections, then you lose the sources, then you lose the inside information to be able to do what you do. This is ego. I told you this after the Masters. I said, this guy is going to be free and easy. He's going to let it fly from the hip. He's going to do what he wants. And if I were other golfers, and I think Scotty has kind of distanced himself from him a little bit, and you can kind of tell where Scotty's comments after some of the wins, you talk about veiled threats. This is a shot across the bow from Scotty. Is like, okay, dude, you want to be on McIlroy Island? You go right ahead. Because there ain't any ports that are going to have any incoming ships to come save you. It's just the way that you've been. You can kind of go right off into the sunset if you want. No one cares. Okay, you're on bonus time now. The fact that this is happening before Oakmont, I think, is on the flip side. He wants to try and get this all done. He doesn't want to take questions about it again next week, because in his heart of hearts, Dave, what he'd love to do is come out and not only win the Open, but beat Scotty head-to-head in the final group and say, now what? And you watch. He'll be available for every media ask if that happens. Bet you dollars and donuts.
Fascinating. Love that perspective, by the way, from another player who's been between the ropes, like Rory is between the ropes. And look, and I get it. I saw golf media, and I'm so glad you brought up the media angle of, like, I was in those scrums for 2 decades. I was never out to get you, man. I was never out to get you. That's not the job, right? Now, you got to report, and you get some things that happen, like a non-conforming driver. Those things got to come to light. And I that veiled threat of, we don't have to talk to you unless the PGA Tour mandates it, it almost feels like a threat partially to the PGA Tour to say, you know what?
Agreed.
Then put it in our contract. You want me to talk to these guys? Yep. Then you better put it in the contract, or else I'm not going to do it because I don't have to do it. And it's a weird juxtaposition that he's kind of finding himself in. I don't know that it factors into my handicap of where Rory's head is, right, for Oakmont next week. But if he wants to make this adversarial, I don't know why he'd want to do that. And by the way, I think the majority of the golf media is trying to help him bury some of these things, if you will, to not make these stories. And I think Rory's a guy that kind of steps in the rake a little bit and hits himself in the face and doesn't have to do it. We'll get to the Scotty stuff, which he kept invoking Scotty's name later on in the program. But, like, it does feel like that rivalry is starting to exist, whether it's because we get the Ryder Cup coming up and Rory's going to be the top dog. Scotty's going to be the top dog for us. He's going to be the top dog for Europe. We get all that. But Jensen, like, I don't know that I'm going to fade him necessarily next week, but when this is still going on, it is a story because it hasn't gone away yet.
It'll definitely be a top 10 play, I think, for me. Barring something unforeseen, it'll probably be a top 10 play for me. And I may parlay it, you know, with a Scotty top 10. Because I do think there's a genuine kind of like, all right, he's got it out for him now. And the fact that Scotty, he didn't say his name, but there's kind of a reference, you know, indirectly or directly there. Like, this is great for the sport, right? You want to have kind of the best of the best going at each other. So I'm kind of excited, buddy. I'm kind of excited where this narrative is. And if he's got a head of steam coming in, you know, winning the RBC, or even if he finishes top five, anxious to see where this plays out.
Hey, man, I'm with you, man. I'm not mad at it. Like, if Rory's mad, I'm not mad at Rory for being mad. If this is going to get something more, we're going to get this rivalry. By the way, be lucky. Scottie Scheffler's the nicest guy in the world. If this was the Tiger Woods era, oh my goodness, it would be very different.
Oh, God.
If you just replaced Scottie with Tiger. Woo! By the way, Triple Crown, we know it's here. The final jewel of it is the Belmont Stakes on Saturday. So no better time to get between and bet those races right now at First Bet. So new users get a $200 sign-up bonus just by using the promo code VEASAN200. So download the app, go to firstbet.com/VEASAN, sign up today. That's firstbet.com/VSIN. Use the promo code VEASAN200 for your $200 bonus.